But first, Helen Phillips. She's a short story writer and novelist. Her latest book is called The Need. It's a subversive thriller about a young mother named Molly. One night, Molly is home alone with her two young children when she thinks she hears footsteps coming from the next room. Molly goes to investigate, and she comes face to face with a masked intruder. So begins Helen's genre-bending tale of the vulnerabilities and triumphs of motherhood. She joins us now to reveal the inspiration behind the book.
Well, The Need began from a very small moment that happened to me when I was nursing my first child, my daughter, and she was a few months old, and I was home alone nursing her. My husband was out for a few hours, and I thought I heard a footstep in the other room. It was no one. The moment passed, but I clung on to that feeling I had in that instant of just almost animal instinctual fear of what would I do if someone came into my home right now when I'm here alone nursing my child who is so vulnerable. That sensation, I felt like I have to write about that. And then the other source of inspiration for the book was when my own daughter was 8 weeks old, my older sister died. She had the rare neurological disorder Rett syndrome, and she died at the age of 32. And so that summer when I was feeling the bounty of having my newborn and then the grief of losing my sister and holding both of those feelings at once really led to the duality you see in The Need.
And your sister, her name is Catherine Rose Phillips.
That's correct.
And you dedicate the book to her. Is that why your protagonist in The Need, Molly, has two children rather than just one? Is it kind of, in a way, a tribute to you and your sister?
I love that way of thinking of it. I hadn't actually conceived of it that way, but I feel like having the sibling is so important. A sibling, in a way, is a doppelganger of you. There's so much you share with your sibling, mm-hmm. and doppelgangers are obviously a theme throughout the book. And also, I wanted Molly to be in a situation where she was very responsible for two children who were at very different developmental stages. So the stresses of caring for a baby are very different from the stresses of caring for a four-year-old. So I wanted you to feel that intensity of both of the children's needs upon her.
Can you give us a brief synopsis of The Need without revealing any major spoilers?
I'll try to, because I did put a lot of twists and turns and surprises. The book begins with Molly home alone with her two young children, and she hears an intruder in the other room. As the story goes on and she discovers the intruder's identity, it really shakes everything that she believes about her own life and her own identity and her own day-to-day existence. Another thing you should know about Molly is that she is a paleobotanist. She studies plant fossils, and at the site where she works, they have recently been discovering some very strange artifacts, including an alternate version of the Bible. So the personal crisis of the intruder in her home and the professional crisis of these strange objects that are causing a lot of controversy end up colliding in the book.
Now would be a great time to have you read an excerpt from The Need, and you can set it up. That would be great.
This is after Molly has heard the footsteps in the other room, and that situation is about to come to a head. She asked her daughter to get a bat from the closet so that she could protect them, but her daughter, rather than bringing the baseball bat that Molly was picturing, actually brings a toy stuffed bat. So at the beginning of this chapter, she's going to throw that bat on the floor. Here we go. Molly threw the bat on the floor. "You hurt Batty," Viv said, stricken. She grabbed Viv's hand and started pulling her down the hallway back toward the closet so she could get the baseball bat and guard the children at the same time. Viv resisted her, bare feet planted on the wooden floorboards, her skin squeaking with each of her mother's yanks. "You come with me right this second," Molly's scream whispered. "But there's a deer in our coffee table," Viv said. And there was. The lid of the coffee table had been thrown back on its hinges. A deer head floated above it. The deer head wasn't floating. It was just that its wearer was standing in a dim living room in a black turtleneck and black hoodie and black pants. It took Molly a second to account for the sensation of simultaneous surreality and familiarity that overwhelmed her. It was her deer mask, David's birthday gift to her. Her milk came down again more insistently. He had made it out of papier-mâché and spray-painted it gold. The mask, which covered the entire head, had a slender snout, narrow eyes, sharp antlers. She gripped her children as though the three of them were poised at the edge of a cliff, wind whipping around them, pebbles giving way beneath them. She could not move. She did not know how to pass through the next seconds of her life. By some impossible sleight of hand, Viv slipped her fingers out of Molly's grasp. The child's motion broke her mother's stillness. Molly cried out twice, once at Viv and a second time for help. But Viv was already stepping away from her, was already reaching to retrieve something from the deer's black gloved hands, the Y book.
That was great. Thank you. And that's such a powerful image that you conjure in the reader's mind, that this intruder wearing this deer mask head that Molly's husband had made for her. That's actually on the British cover of your book, isn't it? The British version?
It is on the British cover. I think it's a very bold cover. I love both of my covers, but they're so different.
And it's interesting, those words that came up in the passage you just read, surreality and familiarity, because those kind of like are two major things that you explore throughout the book.
Yes, that's certainly what I was aiming for. I'm glad that that landed for you, because I really wanted to show mundane, familiar moments in life, like a kid's birthday party or making breakfast for your children, and then undercut that with a sense of surreality and also dread.
Alexandra Alter wrote a story for the New York Times recently about how literary fiction is borrowing from the horror genre to explore the fears and anxieties of motherhood. Your book is mentioned along with Karen Russell's Orange World and a couple of other books. Do you think this is just coincidental, or do you think that there's something happening in our culture right now that explains this trend?
I think that's a fascinating question, and I don't really know the answer to it. I think that one thing is that in terms of genre, I feel like literary fiction is opening up more to the possibilities of borrowing from other genres. I wasn't thinking of horror when I wrote the book, although I understand why people see it that way. I also think that you could call it a thriller of sorts. It has elements of speculative and science fiction. Mm-hmm. Someone even recently told me that it read to them like a ghost story. So I think there's an openness now to using different genres in fiction. I also think that maybe there's another answer to that that has more to do with our current moment, that the anxieties you feel about global warming, which is such a challenging adversary, you can't reason with it, you can't negotiate with it. It's just something that's happening that we're all implicated in. I think that that can lead to a sort of nebulous anxiety. And maybe also that we live in a post-Columbine, post-Sandy Hook world where you feel like even schools themselves aren't the places that feel as safe as we want them to. So maybe some of those cultural anxieties slip into these books.
Both you in your novel, The Need, and Karen Russell in her title story, Orange World, have made tremendous use of your imaginations to show us how scary motherhood can be. Why do you think motherhood is so scary?
Well, I think that part of what we're working against is the image of the glowing, happy mother. Mm-hmm. And I have found motherhood to be a very wondrous and ecstatic experience, but I also found that it has a lot more terror and dread than I was prepared for, just because the love and the dread go hand in hand. The more you love and cherish these vulnerable people, the more you worry about something happening to them. Mm-hmm. And the more anxiety that brings. So I just feel like being able to come out and acknowledge some of those darker or more anxiety-producing aspects of motherhood, it was something I felt compelled to do. And I was wanting to read when my children were young. I craved books that acknowledged all of the different aspects of motherhood, both the joy and the dread.
In The Need, you quote from the Bob Dylan song, Shelter from the Storm, and you include the phrase, burned out from exhaustion, from that song. And it made me wonder how you were able to find the time to write The Need when you have these two young children.
Burned out from exhaustion was the state in which I wrote The Need. So that quote was very appropriate. I do take a particular pride in this book because it's the first book I wrote start to finish since having two children.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That feels like a very meaningful accomplishment.
It is.
I also teach. I'm a professor at Brooklyn College, so I would usually write it for 1 hour a day. I set a timer, and I write for 1 hour a day. So after my children are off to their activities of the day, and before I teach my classes or grade my papers, I would set aside 1 hour, and I would just write it as quickly as possible during that time. So I think that in the short, urgent chapters, that writing process might be in the texture of the book as well.
Yeah, I think it is. I'm curious about your writing process. How do you transfer the story of the need from your brain to paper?
So my writing process for this book and for all of my books begins as an enormous list of images, overheard lines of dialogue, newspaper clippings about interesting things, dreams that I've had, strange things that my kids say, and I make an enormous list that's completely chaotic. And so the next step of the writing process is then to sort those images and scenes and lines into outline sounds a little more grandiose than it is, but into some create some kind of order for those. And when I'm writing the first draft of the book, I call it my zero draft, because it helps me to take the pressure off and to realize this is just the raw material from which the book will be crafted. So the first draft, draft zero of the need, was much longer than the book itself. And then once I have the zero draft, I carve out from that so that I really allow only what matters most to remain.
You've said that if it goes off the rails, and the zero draft usually does, you let it, right? You just let it go wherever it wants to take you?
I let it go, and I take a lot of joy in that zero draft because I say yes to everything. There's something really fun. It's like flying. It's very liberating, knowing that I'm going to have to button it all back in later on.
When you're writing the zero draft and then you come up with stuff that, oh, that never even occurred to me, does that happen quite a bit, stuff that you'll come up with plot points and things that will end up being in the finished product?
Yes, yes. And that's part of the reason that I permit the zero draft to be so expansive, because you do discover things that way. And for all of the, for every 10 things that maybe cause the book to go a little bit off the rails, you might discover one thing that will become a central, crucial element of it.
Yeah. What kind of images were percolating in your brain when you were preparing to write The Need?
So there are a lot of them, but I'll just give a small sampling. One image is the image of two pennies lying side by side, and one of them may or may not be from our world. So looking at two pennies really closely and comparing them. Another image is there's a scene where she describes a cast that was made, a plaster cast of her daughter's hand, which is reaching upwards, that looks to her like a memento mori, but that her daughter's very proud of. And that image of that plaster cast hand, which I may or may not have one of in my home, that is actually a plaster cast of my own child's hand. And the image of the deer mask rising out of the coffee table from the scene that I read to you. So those are some of them, but I really do begin with images. And other writers have told me they begin with plot, or Karen Russell, I recently went to her book launch, and she says she begins with setting. Some writers begin with characters. So it's fascinating to me all the different ways to go about this impossible task of writing a book.
Mm-hmm. When will your children be old enough to read The Need?
That's a scary question,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder what they'll think of it. My 7-year-old, she can read, and she's heard the first chapter, which she seems to find very intriguing. I don't know when they'll be old enough to read it. I'm certainly nervous for them to read it, but I also hope that when they do read it, what they take away from it is my best articulation that I could give of how ferociously I love them.
Helen Phillips is a novelist and the author of The Need. You need to go to WPR.org/beta to find out more about Helen.
He said that the beginning sequence of 2001 with the monkeys or the Neo Men or whatever they are, And the monolith is really a metaphor for the Garden of Eden story.
Journalist Mark Jacobson on conspiracy theorist William Cooper. That's coming up, along with Chris Difford of Squeeze and a rock and roll thought experiment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.